The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's June the 29th, 2006. I'm Tom Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the Director General of the WTO says the current set of meetings in Geneva are a moment of truth and that the U.S. may ultimately walk away from a Doha deal. And there is a move afoot on Capitol Hill to regulate the sale of ammonium nitrate. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories and others later. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And then just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Taking a look at what happened on this Thursday in Chicago at the Board of Trade, futures finished the day like this. July wheat at $3.74, two higher for the day. September's up seven at $3.95. Kansas City wheat finished the July contract, and we don't have a settlement, but this is closed at seven and a quarter higher, $4.98, the final price there. July corn futures now 228 and a half, up 2.5 cents, but the settlement September's at 239 and three quarters, up 2 3/4, and the December contract at 254 and a half, up a half for the day. March contract in the corn pit, Chicago, 266 and a quarter, they were up 2.5. Soy complex now bean futures, July contract 581, up 3 1/4. August at 589, up 3 1/4. September's were up 3 1/4 as well. Their finishing price 596 and a quarter. November beans $6.95, up 3 3/4 for the day. Soybean meal futures, July contract 172.40, down 30. July bean oil at 25.64. They were up 37. From the Mercantile Exchange, August feeder cattle finished at $115 even, off $2.20. June live cattle down $2.40 at $83.85. Lean hogs July contract 72.10 were up 7.5 cents for the day. The outside markets, crude oil now trading at $73.55 a barrel, up $1.36 at this hour, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,155, up 182 points. August gold at $588.90, up $7.90 for the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Dan Zwicker is away on this Thursday afternoon. Dale Durkles from AgriVisor Services here in his stead. Good afternoon to you, Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about some things that have been happening in the outside markets, and then I want to move to the Mercantile Exchange. The Fed raised the rates a quarter of a point today?
Yeah, they did. You know, I don't think it's a huge shock to anybody in the system at this point that they did raise the rates. You know, I mean, we've had this ongoing debate now for the last number of weeks, it seems like, as to whether the Fed was going to raise rates again here or not, and it really started up in earnest when Fed Chairman Bernanke, back about 3 weeks ago, made a comment to the fact that, you know, the Fed was concerned about some of the burgeoning signs of inflation that they were seeing. So I don't think it was a huge shock or a huge move in terms of what people surprised, but basically I think some people took it as an acknowledgement that, you know, other people are seeing, you know, signs of inflation occurring here, not just me.
And then turn your attention to the Mercantile Exchange, where it was a pretty rough day if you were in the cattle pits.
Yeah, it was a pretty rough day. You know, we turned around and the thing just kind of imploded. And the real leader in the market there was the June contract that expires tomorrow. I mean, they unloaded on it at the end of the session. But it was also trading at a premium to where the cash market had traded last week. So, you know, I think some of those people that were long in the market here the last couple of days decided, you know, maybe we better get out, because cash trade, even though it's firm here, there isn't a lot of certainty it's going to end up trading higher than it was a week ago. So I think it was just basically a liquidation move out of the thing, an expiration on its heels. And that, in turn, put pressure on all the contracts behind them, especially given the fact that they're even trading higher or at a larger premium to the cash market than the June was.
And then from there, let's move over to the Chicago Board of Trade. We'll start with the wheat pits, where they had a pretty good gain, anywhere between 7 and 8 cents higher for the day in the nearby contracts.
Well, soon, you know what's going on in the wheat pit we can talk about in earnest and only talk about in the corn and bean pits. It's going to be called weather. Now, whether it's good or bad, I don't know about that, but that's all we're going to be talking about, I think. And that's really been the buzzword in the wheat pits this week because, you know, all the forecasts that seem to come in, no matter the murkiness they have as far as the Corn Belt is concerned, when you look out there at the west or the northern plains where we raise spring wheat, you know, you're seeing the conditions, or at least the forecast conditions, looking like it's going to stay on the warm side and on the dry side. And it's already dry out there. So you got people really starting to back off a little bit in here in terms of yield expectations for the spring crop. And after having problems with the hard red winter crop down in Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, you know, we're really in need to have a good spring crop this year. So that's just kind of ratcheted up the anxiety, and the leadership really in the wheat pits themselves is in the Minneapolis market because of that, you know, in Kansas City coming along second because they're both somewhat interchangeable.
I did see some weather reports today that suggested that, of course, that high-pressure ridge would be sticking around over that part of the world so that North and South Dakota, I suppose, parts of Canada would not be in very good shape and a lot of heat. But on the other hand, that there would be some northerlies that would sweep over parts of eastern Iowa and then from there into the eastern Corn Belt that should keep the soybean and corn crop in pretty good condition, except for Nebraska, I would think, and maybe far western Iowa.
Could. You know, that's the big question. You know, back before we get away from wheat, the Minneapolis contract, which is really the new crop spring wheat contract.
Sure.
It's up pushing up just against its contract high at this point. So I think, you know, the leadership in the wheat pits really has gone over to Minneapolis. You know, as far as the weather, you know, when you look at the Corn Belt itself, you know, and you said, you know, there's some people talking about, well, when you get into the plains like Nebraska, South Dakota, and then maybe the very western Iowa, there are some of these models too that you know they're in, you know, the models have been flip-flopping back and forth in here as to whether they agree, the American model and the European model, the last few days. And you know, there have been times when they run these models, and they run them about four times a day and now I think, but there have been times when these weather models have kind of hinted, you know, this warmer, drier pattern could shift a little deeper into the western part of the Corn Belt itself, though. And I think that's just keeping these corn soybean traders a little bit on edge, especially when you look out at some of the soil moisture maps and really see the indications that, you know, we have some problem pockets in the Corn Belt itself, and we have other areas where the crops look good, but moisture supplies aren't real good at this point either. So, you know, everybody's really kind of sitting on the knife edge trying to figure out, you know, what kind of yield are we going to have?
I want you to divide the Corn Belt up just a bit, and I want to talk about tomorrow's acreage report and what things. I'm going to make an assumption you have thought about this. So, and I don't know where you put the dividing line, but let's say we divide it at Des Moines, north and south. And tell me about acreage east of there and then potential acreage to the west of there and how that plays out in the acreage reports tomorrow. And if we have a drought to the west of there, what happens to the marketplace? I guess what I'm thinking is that
you want this answer in 10 seconds.
Yeah,
too,
no,
right?
I don't. We've got time. You have 2 minutes at this point.
You know, I think, you know, in looking at it in broad perspective, the first thing that I tell people, and this isn't trying to figure out things specifically about, well, what changes are we having in what areas. The March report, you know, we got the surprisingly low acreage number. We had corn futures take a pretty good shot to the upside. New crop corn futures really leading the way. You saw along with that soybean futures, you know, take a bit of a dip to the downside. But they actually turned and rallied back during the month of April and on into May, too. But it wasn't so much the push we had off the March report that was big. And, you know, we'd had prior highs before we had that somewhere around 265, and after we got that March report, we'd bumped it up in there to about 275. you know, it really wasn't a lot, and we really didn't have the big push in the corn market to get up into the 285 until we had that steep rally based off the May supply-demand numbers. And by that point, most of the corn crop was in the ground, and or most of the land was prepared to plant corn at that point. The other thing that people tend to forget in here, too, is that even though corn prices improved somewhat, we really did not change the overall cost structure of producing corn, and that's the big ingredient that people have kind of looked at all year long as being the thing that was going to swing the acres from away from corn back into soybeans itself. So I don't know that we really got a real huge shift in corn plantings themselves because of that March report and what came behind it. I'm thinking, you know, something in order of a million to maybe at a million and a half acres. The big thing that's different when you look at the Corn Belt and you divide it up, Indiana, parts of Ohio were wet, and so planting was late. You may have actually seen, because of that, some fields that did not get planted to corn. Then you go into the very far western edge of the Corn Belt, especially the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, where you had a soybean market that was languishing, but you had a spring wheat market and hard red winter wheat market that was really pushing up pretty hard because of the weather down in the southern plains. I think you're probably going to see we rotated some land out of soybeans from what was implied back on the March report back into spring wheat itself in some of those lands. It wasn't a big move, but I think enough. So we aren't going to see a one-to-one shift between corn planting and bean planting on these numbers in the morning.
And the bottom line, do you think USDA 78 is on target or still too
late? No, I think we'll see more acres of corn and fewer acres of beans than what we had in March. And, you know, I'm basically collaring somewhere around $1.2 to $1.5 million on corn acres up.
Okay, thanks much, Dale.
All right, bye.
Mm-hmm. Dale Durkles is with AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Thursday afternoons. Pete Levitt will join us at the bottom of the hour to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Scott Althoff says tonight in western and southern Illinois it'll become mostly cloudy. A few clusters of thunderstorms developing. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 54 in northeastern Indiana to 64 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow in central and southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana, partly sunny, some scattered showers, and a few thunderstorms. Dave Dickey is here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, WTO Director General Pascal Lemay says meetings that began today in Geneva are, in his words, a moment of truth for the Doha round of world trade talks. Lemay says the U.S. and European Union must make difficult concessions this week or risk collapse of 5 years of negotiations. But Lemay acknowledged that the U.S. may ultimately walk away from a Doha deal.
I understand why the U.S. Are looking for an improved offer by the Europeans or by G20 countries. This is perfectly legitimate. At the end of the day, they will have, like all the members, to make a decision on whether the proportion is right or not.
Lemay says the U.S. needs to lower its cap for trade-distorting subsidies below $20 billion a year. The current U.S. proposal calls for $22.4 billion in subsidies annually. The American Farm Bureau Federation called LeMay's suggestion unacceptable because it would result in economic losses for American producers. Earlier this week, U.S. lawmakers cautioned USDA not to accept a deal that ultimately would be unfavorable to American farmers. LeMay says he's been hearing a lot of that among WTO member nations lately.
Each of the main actors has its own offensives and its own defensives. So no problem with as many members as possible believing that no deal is better than a bad deal.
Still, AFBF President Bob Stallman says a good WTO deal in the final analysis would be better for the U.S. in trying to reach free trade deals with individual nations.
If you have one set of rules worldwide that countries abide by, it makes it so much easier to export products. When we do these trade agreements with these individual countries, each has sort of a different set of rules, if you will, and you know, it makes it a little more difficult to, you have to be more individualized as to how you address trade with those countries. So there is some benefit in having a worldwide opening of markets as opposed to a piecemeal opening of markets, country by country.
More than 60 trade ministers are in Geneva to discuss trade issues, the largest gathering since a failed WTO conference in Hong Kong 6 months ago. The talks are expected to run through the weekend. The House Homeland Security Committee has adopted a bill that would authorize the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, to regulate the sale of ammonium nitrate fertilizer. The bill was introduced in response to recent arrests of terror suspects in Canada. The measure now moves to the House floor. Meanwhile, a Senate bill currently awaiting floor action would change the way farm pesticides and fertilizers are handled and stored. The bill would require chemical plants and handlers to conduct vulnerability assessments and create site security and emergency response plans overseen by the DHS. And experts speaking at USDA's Energy and Agriculture Conference say there's a trend toward increased interest from urban investors when it comes to building ethanol plants. USDA Chief Economist Keith Collins says co-op investors may soon be a thing of the past. Prior to 2000, about 40% of all ethanol investment came from farmer-owned co-ops. Collins says that percentage is quickly dropping as more ethanol plants are being built. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, two other news stories for the day. The first, a follow-up from yesterday's announcement by Monsanto. It has acquired five Midwestern seed companies for $77 million. Monsanto's ASI, American Seeds Incorporated, has acquired the seed marketing and sales businesses of Diener Seeds, based in Reynolds, Indiana, and Sieben Hybrids, based in Geneseo, Illinois. ASI also entered into definitive agreements to acquire Kruger Seed Company, based out of Dyke, Iowa, Tristler Seed Farms, based in Fairmont, Illinois, and the seed marketing and sales business of Campbell Seeds, based in Tipton, Indiana. Well, the second story comes out of Springfield, where Governor Rod Blagojevich has announced $3.2 million for the planning and design of the Integrated Post-Harvesting Processing Center for the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, which will be the first phase of the South Farms Modernization Project. The 60,000-square-foot center will include biotechnology, fermenting, corn milling, and soybean processing laboratories and equipment. Up next, in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkis says carbon credit trading is an emerging market worth watching.
It has taken many years for the ethanol market to gather the momentum it has today. While it may seem like a fledgling fuel to the general public, farmers know better. Now farmers, principally in the Midwest, are eyeing another emerging market, carbon. Granted, carbon credit trading is a more elusive market than biofuels or other farm commodities. Carbon isn't physically delivered from the farm to a market. It is stored in the soil or removed from the air by trees. In effect, what farmers are selling is environmental services to offset carbon dioxide emissions into the atmosphere. The Iowa Farm Bureau Federation has been the pace setter for agriculture in recognizing the carbon market and organizing pools of farmland from which to sell carbon credits. The first pool totaled around 80,000 acres, the second 255,000 acres. A third pool now forming will have enrollment from 8 or 9 states. The market itself is in the Chicago Climate Exchange, an electronic trading platform similar to the NASDAQ stock market. Aggregators and single providers offer carbon credits for sale on the exchange. Exchange members who need credits to offset their greenhouse emissions are the bidders. Climate Exchange members include Ford Motor Company, IBM, American Electric Power, and other large corporations and utilities. Several cities and universities also participate. Most of the credits sold by the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation resulted from no-till planting, which holds more carbon in the soil than conventional tillage. A no-till corn or soybean field stores roughly half a ton of carbon per acre per year. On a 500-acre farm, on average, it's going to end up at about 270 credits per year. Those credits are going to be worth about $4 a ton, so that would be a little over $1,000 a year at current market prices. If a mandatory cap-and-trade emissions program is implemented here, as it has been in Europe, the potential for the market would be in the range of 30 to 40 million acres of offsets provided by agriculture. Carbon credits in Europe are trading at $15 to $25 a ton. What farmers are doing to sequester carbon on their land is good for the soil as well as the atmosphere, and that's another good reason for them to pay attention to this emerging market. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850. By the way, if you'd like to learn more about carbon trading, there are links on our website under the features section to a story we did a little earlier in the year. Scroll down and look for Carbon Sink for No-Till. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing, located at the Elevator in Lexington, Illinois, now joins us on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the kinds of things you've been thinking about over the last several hours as we head into tomorrow morning's USDA crop and acreage reports at 7:30 a.m. Central Time for the release.
Well, of course, it's a pretty critical time right now. We've got deliveries tomorrow on the July contracts. That's always causes some volatility, or a lot of times it does. We have the report, and I guess what I've been looking at here a little bit is just how important the acres in that and where the acres are, and some of that may be to the basis side of things too on corn. If you just sit back and look at it here, we've got, say we use the acres that the trade is guessing on corn and beans and look at the yields that the USDA's plugged in the May report.
So 79 and 149.
Right. And look at corn and bean total bushels, including our carryout that they projected, plus our production. We're really looking a couple hundred million less bushels. Now, if you consider we've got more storage than we had last year, I mean, there's been storage built. We've got less wheat on hand out west, and hopefully we won't have to deal with the Katrina-type situation. I mean, you could make the argument the basis should really come into this fall and be a little bit better than what we've seen. Now, all that can change if you have changes in either the acres tomorrow or, you know, we find out that we have a lot better yields as we get into the rest of the summer. So.
Can you rectify that with geographically where the market thinks those extra acres are? I think most of them believe they're out west as opposed to here in the Midwest.
Well, I think that's probably true, but as far as yields go and actual bushels as you get into harvest, we probably are going to end up with more bushels in the east than we had a year ago because we did have our yields down pretty good on corn last year.
Absolutely.
So I think that'll make a difference.
Okay, and then your bids for the day are what?
203 cash corn, 218 for new crop, 552 on the beans, 573 for new crop.
Bill, thanks much for joining us.
Thank you.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Thursday afternoons. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Coverage under the All Kids Health Insurance Program begins Saturday, and key participants say they're feeling cautiously optimistic about its success. The Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services says health care providers and community groups have already helped register 43,000 children for the program. Police are still looking for a murder suspect in Piatt County. 46-year-old Jerry Henderson is wanted in connection with the beating death of John Tash of Urbana. His body was found buried in a field near Mansfield. A second suspect in the case is already in custody. Motorists who fuel their cars with E85 will now be able to travel between Chicago and Kansas City, Missouri, exclusively on the corn-based fuel. Ford Motor Company and VeriSun today announced plans to add more than 50 additional sites offering the gasoline-ethanol blend, largely along I-55 in Illinois and I-70 in Missouri. Indiana Senator Richard Lugar will have no Democratic opposition when he runs for his sixth term in November. Indiana Democratic Party Chairman Dan Parker says the 74-year-old Lugar is just too popular to waste time and money challenging him. Lugar is Indiana's longest-serving U.S. senator. He won his last three elections with more than two-thirds of the vote. University of Illinois scientists say their research points to the potential for serious problems with the food supply by the middle of the century. The researchers say calculations used for years to project the effect of climate change on crops may be inaccurate. A Champaign-Urbana businessman is adding to an education fund for past and present present residents of Cunningham Children's Home in Urbana. Franchise Management Systems President William Myers is donating an additional $110,000 to the education fund at the facility for emotionally troubled young people. Children's Home CEO Sam Banks says the donation should double the number of young adults who go through either vocational training or on to college. Cunningham Children's Home is in the middle of a capital campaign. It's just completed a new residential center. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolandagrienergy.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather across the Midwest, please.
Well, the weather across the Midwest as we speak is pretty sunny, pretty decent from wall to wall, from the western Corn Belt through the eastern Corn Belt. But we have a weekend approaching, and it looks like the weather's going to start to go downhill a little bit. First opportunity for showers looks like it comes up across Illinois late Friday, Friday night into Saturday as a weak frontal system drops southeastward through the belt. We don't think the showers will be very heavy or concentrated, but it will produce a little unsettled weather. Then we get a break on Saturday, and then as we move into Sunday, another system, a little bit more active-looking system, approaches from the north. We get some showers down late Sunday, Sunday night, into the northern portions of the Corn Belt, Iowa, northern Illinois. And then they gradually work their way southward on Monday, Sunday night and Monday. The good news, what there is of it, is that it looks like we might be able to get this system out of the way with high pressure coming in on Tuesday the 4th. And so Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, of course, it always looks nice after the holidays. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday look pretty good. It's just that we have two episodes of showers, one light and scattered Friday night, Saturday, and another bit maybe more general, especially in the northern half of the Corn Belt on Sunday, Monday, late Sunday to Monday.
Most of the farmers will probably appreciate a little shower, despite the fact that it's a holiday weekend. Will there be much heat involved in this particular?
No, there won't. As a matter of fact, the warmest it looks like it's going to get over the weekend in Illinois. We may, on Saturday, it looks like the warm day after this little episode of cooler weather and showers comes in on late Friday, Friday night. Saturday, we may get up to about 90 or so. But then it cools off again, and the temperatures are really rather moderate, very close to normal for the balance of the period. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, looks like they're going to be maxes in the low to mid-80s, minimums in the low to mid-60s. This is beautiful weather, except for the showers here and there. Temperatures are going to be moderate.
And then if you could outline any of the growing regions that you have concerns about at this point, nationally or globally.
Well, we'll look globally very quickly. The Indian monsoon is coming to life again after a two-and-a-half-week break. They need the rain badly. This is the few months of the year they get their rain, and they had an early start, then they had short-changed. Now that it's coming back, Australia, of course, has their winter wheat crop going in and is trying to get established, and it's been much too dry in Western Australia. They're going to lose some wheat in Western Australia. Most of that wheat is for export, by the way. In Eastern Australia, they did get some showers in northern New South Wales, which helped a bit. They're still a little dry, but it doesn't look as threatening as it is in Western Australia.
Pete, thanks much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Peter Labbitt, agricultural meteorologist, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the agricultural markets on the pre-opening commodity market report. I'm Todd Gleason.